complacency has the unwanted side effect of dependency. And dependency always leads to what?
Tyranny
and oppression. So if someone can make you dependent on them, they now get to control you. Correct? So, the question, of course, is where are we in this country or this Western civilization cycle, wherever you want to put it, where are we here? Where would you say?
In between abundance and
dependence. In between abundance and dependence? And of course, you and I, we live in a kind of strange world where we don't often interact with people that are that much unlike we are. Have you ever noticed that? I sometimes do meet people who have extremely different beliefs than me, and it shocks me that anybody could be that stupid. But then I realize, no, that's actually representative of a large number of people who think differently than I do. And I don't interact with them. I live in a rarefied, isolated world. And I know this. So I have to remind myself of this. When you launch out from under your umbrella of your home, or if you have already, you may have noticed this. You go to a college campus. You meet some people with some radically different ways of thinking about everything, whether it comes to family or life or economics or politics. It's possible that we are still very happy kind of in our complacency zone, but there are other people who are clearly in a dependency zone. I remember seeing a little clip, a woman after the Katrina hurricane. She was basically screaming. She was screaming at the camera. The government isn't doing enough to help us. The government should be taking care of us. That was her attitude, do you see? So it's a little different, isn't it? When too many people have that attitude, the government should be taking care of us, what does that cause?
Dependency.
A full-out society of dependency. All right, so those are three ways you could start to study cycles. There are more cycles that I have read about, but those are the three that stick with me. And when you're studying this, and when you're reading history, and you're looking at the patterns, you want to always say, where am I? Because, see, I believe that's actually connected with what am I supposed to do with my life? Why were you born in 1997, or whenever you were born, and not in 1897? Well, because your parents hadn't met. No, because God needs you now. Probably there's something far bigger, far greater than you will ever know. Until you can look at the whole tapestry at the end as to why you were born when you were born and you're sitting here right now. And so that grander perspective of history, I think it's so important. Mark Twain said a nice little thing. He said, history may not repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. So you see the patterns and you see the cycles. All right. Third area of mental preparation would, of course, be your education. Now, up until about this point, you have had an education that has probably in great part been directed by other people. Would you agree? I mean, let's face it, most of being a kid is about getting bossed around. So from the time you can walk and talk, people are saying, go here, don't go there. Do this, don't do that. Read this, don't read that. Say this, don't say that. Right? It's pretty much about getting bossed around. But right around now, you are tired of it. Am I right? You would like to not be bossed around. So I will tell you the secret of how to not be bossed around. Boss yourself around. See, the only reason people tell you what to do with your time is you look like you don't know what to do with it. Right? The only reason that people tell you what to learn and study is because you don't look like you know what to learn and study. But if you will take responsibility for your own education, people will get out of your way. Right? Every time. And at some point, you will, by default, no longer have anyone bossing you around. At which point, if you have the habit of bossing yourself around well, you will be better off than people who do not. Because people who do not already have self-governing skills will look to be governed by others. Freedom is only possible in a condition of self-government. You can only be truly free when you have self-discipline. No discipline is not freedom. It is the opposite of freedom. It's enslavement. It's enslavement to habit, enslavement to sin. We know this from the Bible. So, right now, you want to start saying to yourself every day, how shall I be educated? Now, one very important thing to keep in mind, Mark Twain said this very eloquently. He said, I have always tried to be sure that schooling did not interfere with my education. Because schooling tell you what to read and what you should think about everything. And then you go home and you practice that a little bit. You massage it around. You try to memorize stuff. And then you go back and they ask you questions. If you give the right answers, you win the game. If you give the wrong answers, you lose the game. That's not good. If you refuse to answer, they just kick you out. But if you ask too many questions yourself, you're dangerous. So for a lot of people, schooling is more like programming. And if you want to read the fascinating history of American education by John Taylor Gatto, called An Underground History of American Education, you can read it for free at johntaylorgatto.com. And you can actually see how education in this country was specifically designed, specifically engineered, and implemented to create predictable, obedient, controllable citizens. Factory workers, voters, and consumers who would do and think and vote and buy exactly what they were told to. You want to get off that conveyor belt, right? And most of you have. Praise the Lord. So you'd say to yourself, how do I want to educate myself? Educare, to draw out, to lead out of darkness into light. Character, knowledge, skills. That's what you are. I mean, character, that's your soul, that's your who you are, that's your spiritual content, that's your integrity. Knowledge, that's the stuff you know. And one of the things I've noticed is that the conveyor belt system of schooling in this country is very good at teaching almost nothing about everything to almost everyone, right? Because what happens is you learn a little bit about a whole lot of stuff, and then summer comes and you stop reading and thinking for a while, evaporation sets in, and it all just kind of, is gone. You go back the next year, do the same thing. Evaporation, it's all gone. Next year, you can do the same thing. Year after year, 12 years of school, what do you know? Almost nothing about everything. But you have the opportunity to determine that you want to go deep. Learn a lot about one thing. Because, you know, evaporation will still set in. You'll still forget stuff, right? But if you go deep and you learn a lot about less, evaporation comes, but you have stuff left over. That's one of the great benefits I see of the debate. Those of you who do debate, policy debate in particular, and you get this thing like the United Nations. And you go, United Nations? What is that? You know nothing. And then 6 months later, you know every obscure little fact about the United Nations. You really don't care. But you learned every little obscure fact about the United Nations because you wanted to win. That's okay. But in going deep, guess what? You learned about the history of it. You learned about the economics of it. You learned about the politics and the agriculture. And you learn the subjects by going deep into one area of study. So I just encourage you, go deep into things. And then when evaporation sets, you'll still learn something. Skills, of course, this is the stuff that we tend to pay more attention to in our world. Skills really divide into two categories. One would be math, and one would be language. And then the corpus callosum, the connection point between those, would be logic. So if you study logic, that's like connecting the two sides of your brain in a really healthy way. So I encourage that. But I came across this very interesting article that was just out just this last month, November. I guess that's 2 months ago. And it's entitled, The Real Reason New College Grads Can't Get Hired. Did you realize there is a 60% unemployment rate among college graduates in California? Of course, that could be California's problem. But 60%, last May's college graduates are unemployed or underemployed. Right? That's pretty shocking when you think about it. And this is saying the real reason. And so I just wanted to read to you a little bit of this. It's because college kids today can't do math, one line of reasoning goes, or they don't know science, or they're clueless about technology aside from their myriad social media profiles. These are all good theories, but the problem with the unemployment of these young adults goes way beyond a lack of STEM skills. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. As it turns out, they can't even show up on time in a button-down shirt and organize a team project. The technical term for navigating a workplace effectively might be soft skills. But employers are facing some hard facts. The entry-level candidates who are on tap to join the ranks of full-time work are clueless about the fundamentals of office life. A survey by Workforce Solutions Group at St. Louis Community College finds that more than 60% of employers say applicants lack, quote, communication and interpersonal skills, a jump of about 10 percentage points in just 2 years. A wide margin of managers also say today's applicants can't, get this one, think critically and creatively, solve problems, or write well. This is so good for my business. Another employer survey, this one by the staffing company Adecco, turns up similar results. The company says in a statement, 44% respondents cited soft skills such as communication, critical thinking, creativity, and collaboration as the area with the biggest gap. Only half as many say a lack of technical skills is the main point. And it goes on. And what they're saying essentially, if you can listen, if you can speak well, if you can write well, and if you can think, which means what? Asking good questions and having knowledge to help answer the questions you ask yourself. And you can relate to people. You will be in demand. It doesn't matter what you study. Anybody can train you to do a job if that's what you want them to do. But you can't train in character and these kind of soft skills. Do you see? So you work on those things. Then, whether you get a job or start your own business or whatever you do, you'll be way more prepared to have success. Second area of preparation now. Boy, this is really taking a lot longer than I thought. Second area of preparation, physical preparation. This is brief. This is very brief, I promise you. This basically is be healthy, be strong, keep your mind and body in good shape, and get tough, you know, gird up your loins. Like Chris said, you know, you've girded up your mental loins, but you also have to keep yourself in good condition. I came across this funny article. I don't want to read it because it kind of idolized wealth, which I'm very much opposed to. But it essentially said habits of wealthy people versus habits of poor people. Wealthy people, fewer than 3% eat more than 300 calories of junk food a day, right? Poor people, what do you think the percentage is? Yeah, 80%. This one really got me. 97% of wealthy people don't watch reality TV shows. And it was in high 60s or something of the poor people. And it did this whole thing. Now, of course, I'm not at all saying that being wealthy is better than being poor. I actually think there's a good case for voluntary poverty. But the fact is that people who are successful have certain habits. And among those are, guess what? Early to bed, early to rise, makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise, and then throw in a bunch of organic food, get enough exercise, and don't do nasty things. All right, end of that topic. We've got to speed up here. Spiritual preparation, you know, we've touched on this a little bit. One of the things that I realize is that this is the hardest time, really, for young people to have a spiritual orientation. You live in a condition, most of you, in abundance. You are constantly battered. Even if you never watch television or never go to the internet or never go to the supermarket, it will somehow seep through into your consciousness over the last 10 years that material things are the way that you become successful in life. That having stuff is what makes you happy. It's really hard to exercise that out of our brains. It's infected even me. And yet, we know that's not true. We know that stuff doesn't make anyone happy. And in some cases, more stuff makes you less happy. There's a Greek Stoic philosopher, pre-Christian, Epictetus. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Epictetus, I think. He said a really interesting thing. I think there's some truth to this. Jot it down. Think about it a little bit. Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. I visited a family a few years ago. This is a family that one of my daughters had met on an internet connection on a homesteading blog, and she wanted to go visit them, so I actually drove her to their family's home, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. We flew up and then drove the rest of the way. And I happened to be in this family's home, and there was a 12-year-old girl in this home, and it was her birthday. We just happened to be there on her birthday. And so they did a little thing with a little apple thing and a little candle, and very small, and a bunch of kids. I don't know, not as many as you, but at least seven. And this girl got a little present from one of her parents, and then she got that. And then she got a check from her grandma, right? It was a check for $20 from her grandma. And she probably gave it to her dad and said, "Here, Dad, you can have this." And he said, "No, you can keep it. You might want to buy something." And she said with absolute honesty and purity, "I don't really need anything. You take it for the family." I mean, I was embarrassed. Because I thought none of my children would ever say anything like that. They'd probably say, "What, Grandma, $20? Cheapskate, Grandma, what happened? Used to be 50, you know." But what struck me was this beautiful, beautiful child at this hard age, really, of 12 for most girls, kids, who had no want. And in that complete lack of want, she was wealthier than any child I had ever met. It shamed me, honestly. It was so beautiful. So think about that. I think it's a spiritual element. One of the harder passages in the Bible, I find. I love what Mark Twain said about the Bible. He said, "It's not the things I don't understand in the Bible that bother me. It's the things which are perfectly clear that make me nervous." And one of those perfectly clear things is from Matthew, where Jesus is talking about your treasure is where your heart is. And if your eye is good, then your whole body will be full of light. That's kind of hard to understand. But then he gets real clear and says this: "No one can serve two masters, for he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon." Now, I looked up the word mammon just to see, you know, what does that really mean? And here was the definition: wealth regarded as an object of worship. Or, in the medieval sense, the name of the demon of covetousness. Isn't that interesting? I never knew that before. And then he goes on, this is so brilliant. Aren't you always amazed at how Jesus can say these brilliant things? "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, nor about what you will put on. Is not life more than food and body more than clothing?" See, you can tell he was talking to an audience of boys and girls here. Because he was talking to the boys, "Don't worry about what you're going to eat." And then he was saying to the girls, "Don't worry about the clothes thing. It's not all that important. That's not what it's all about." And he goes on a bit about that and then says, "For your heavenly Father knows that you need these things. Seek first what? The kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added to you." Do you see? So you got to remember that, because the world is your biggest enemy. The opposition to you being prepared for your mission is easy to say and hard to fight. The world, the flesh, and the devil. Right? And the world is the one that is pushing the devil and the flesh at you all the time. And it's saying, "You need this stuff to be happy. And you need to have this, you know, physical relationship to be happy. And you need to do this." And every book that's published and every TV show is coming from this context. And if you don't discern and judge rightly, you will not identify those things. And it could derail you. It could distract you. It could cause you to get sucked in to an area where you don't want to be, if what you want is God's will for your life. So, those are the three ways to be prepared: mental, physical, spiritual. What are your assets? What do you have going for you right now? Well, time. It's about your only asset. None of you look particularly wealthy right now to me. You're not rolling in the dough, are you? No. So you can't necessarily throw a lot of money at problems and hope they'll go away. Although people who do throw money at problems discover that's not really all that effective anyway. But you have time. You have more time now than you ever will in the future. In two ways. You've got more of your life ahead of you, and you don't have the heavy responsibilities of self-support and family support. I love that saying, youth is wasted on the young. Because it seems like, oh, if I knew what I knew now and had all the freedom that you have, oh, what could I do? I'd probably just fritter away the time. But you've got it, right? So you have to decide how to use it. Because that's your only asset. So if your mission is to be prepared for your mission, right? And you're thinking about how to be prepared mentally, physically, and spiritually, how you use time is the single most important thing you can decide every day, isn't it? Right? You get up in the morning and say, what am I going to do today? And you plan what you're going to do. That, by the way, also is on that list of habits. 80% of wealthy people plan their day every day. Only 20% of poor people do. Right? Why? Because that is a productivity thing. And if you're really ambitious, you get up at, what time do you get up, Chris?
3 a.m.
Although he has a weird idea about sleep. You might want to wait till you're a bit older. It could stunt your growth. But you get up early, you plan your day, you plan how you use your time, and you remember one important thing. If you're doing one thing, you're not doing something else. Right? If you're reading a bad book, you're not reading a good one. If you're watching a TV show, you're not learning, necessarily, depending on the show, something of value. Right? If you're eating junk food, you're not eating good food. Right? If you're studying Spanish, you can't study Latin. So cut the Spanish thing. I'm joking. I'm half joking. Your second asset, mentors. You have mentors available. That's what this whole conference is about. That's what people like Travis are trying to do in life, is make this context of mentoring, of coaching, real in your life. See, for decades now, parents and teachers have kind of been abdicating, and kids have been not going out to search for mentors. But I will tell you, the four most significant people in my life were mentors. They were people who disciplined me, who taught me to think, who demanded higher performance of me, and whom I was willing to submit to their authority. You have to be willing to submit to the authority of a mentor. Otherwise, you simply have somebody who's giving you advice, right? Which is okay. But it's not the same relationship. And then you've got your talents and your interests. That's your next asset, your talents and your interests. And that's one thing we're going to talk about. And that's going to be an asset that we can really help you focus on and think about and contemplate and expand in the conference here over the next day and a half. And then the last thing you have in terms of asset that I can see, you may come up with more on your own, is your friends. Friends are tremendously important people, and as I alluded to before, you want to be sure that you spend your time with people who will bring out the best in you. Epictetus, whose name I still cannot pronounce correctly, basically said the key to success in all things is to be with people who will bring out the best in you. Who will elevate you. When you go into the world, you go into an office, you go into a classroom, you go into a school, you go into an organization, there's a spectrum of people. There's people of character and nobility and virtue, and there's people that go down from there, sometimes, depending on where you are, very low. You have to choose where you will go to. You have to choose the people that you will be influenced by. So then your adventure begins, preparation. You launch out, and this is where I want to suggest that you might end up doing some crazy things. The conveyor belt the world has set out for people your age kind of goes like this. You do school. Then you do college. The reason you do college is so you get a job. The reason you get a job is to pay off your college student loans. After you've done that, then you can accumulate stuff. And the reason you accumulate stuff is because that's what you're supposed to do. A lot of people think this way. I'm sure you've met some. But looking at the different paradigm, you might want to do some crazy things. In fact, God might need you to do some crazy things that are very different than that conveyor belt paradigm that so many of your peers are locked into thinking that way, right? So I wanted to share with you 10 crazy things I did before I was 25 years old.